This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Second half of the show, we are putting on our mock arbitration cases. As all Jets fans know, the arbitration dates for Brian Little, Zach Bogosian, and Blake Wheeler are getting closer to coming to fruition. We're going to do mock arbitration cases today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. Richie, Ezzy, good morning. How are you both gentlemen doing? You're both looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on this Saturday morning.
Well, of course, Drew. We went to the Great Bombers game last night.
Yeah, and hang on. Update from the stadium. The Argos just got another touchdown.
It was a heck of a game. Stadium was beautiful. The weather was a tad chilly. And apparently there were some people between the green between the lines yesterday that were playing, allegedly. Nobody actually was watching the game.
No.
We left with 10 minutes left to go in the game, and the buses were all full. So that's an experience. Luckily, we're not a Bombers show, or maybe not luckily, because we could have a serious conversation about that team.
Yeah, if you had a Bombers show right now, and I'm sure H&L will cover this in vivid detail on Monday.
Yeah.
But boy, oh boy, you'd have a lot of material to work with.
Ooh. We love the Bombers. We were all there. The only member of Illegal Curve that wasn't there was Dave Minuk. I'm not sure why he wasn't there, because he likes his Bombers. But
I didn't know you guys were allowed to be separate from each other.
We've sat through some pretty lean years, and we've had our season tickets for the last 2 years. We didn't renew this year. But last night was very difficult to watch. That was a tough one, because the Bombers didn't have much going. And the stadium looks good, as Richie said, and we'll leave it at that. That was about the only thing that looked good.
Exactly right. Let's start with the Winnipeg Jets this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Made two signings over the course of the past 7 days, managing to avoid arbitration with both Paul Postma and Eric Tangrady. Tangrady signs a 2-year deal, $1.35 million total, an average annual value, a salary cap hit of $675,000. Paul Postma signs a 2-year deal, $1.425 million, average annual value of $712,000. $1,500 of a salary cap hit. Let's start this way. You know, how do you see these two players figuring in on the Jets 2013-2014 roster?
I think Tangrady is probably more of a prominent role than does Postma. And I think Tangrady really, you know, we were talking about it before the show, Drew. You know, is he the third line left winger? Or is he the fourth line left winger? And, you know, what are him and James Wright? Because I think those are the two guys that are fighting for those spots. Top, you know, at the top of the Jets depth chart, you have Andrew Ladd and Evander Kane. After that, in the left wing, you really have Tangrady and Wright. So they're going to have an opportunity. Whether Tangrady's third or fourth, you know, you want to have training camp battles. I mean, is that the best possible option for the Jets to have those two guys fighting over third and fourth left wing spots? No. But it is what it is, and they're going to battle for it. In terms of Postma, I just don't see how he factors into the top six when you have, I think, Trouba starting off the year in the NHL. We'll see how that goes. Bogosian and Byfuglien. Barring a trade, Postma is a right side guy, unless he plays the left side. And even then, is he an upgrade over Stewart or, you know, Klitsam and such? He's a seven guy. So I think Tangrady is going to play a more prominent role, likely, injuries aside, over the course of the year.
Let me ask you this question. Sorry, Ez. You mentioned training camp battle between Tangrady and Wright.
Yeah.
You know, I agree that they're both either going to be, one's going to, the training camp battle is either third or fourth line, because who else is battling with them for a left side roster spot right now?
I mean, you're talking young guys, right? You're talking like, you know, is Telegan healthy, and, you know, what wing is he going to play, and how is Adam Lowry going to, you know, play in the preseason. So I think those are all factors. But at the end of the day, I think they still want to have the young guys go to the AHL.
I think what you have with the Jets right now is you have the left wing position is top heavy.
Yeah.
And I don't think training camp is really going to solve too much as far as the third and fourth line goes, because I think you're going to see a lot of different guys used there. And you know, Richie's right. I mean, do you give Klingberg a chance? Do you give Telegen a chance? You know, are you going to make a move later on in the season because you want a little bit more scoring on the left wing? Mm-hmm. But that's what you're going to see. I mean, I'd actually like to see probably Tangrady on the fourth line and James Wright on the third line. And then the fourth line, you have something like Slater, Thorburn, Slater, Peluso, and Tangrady. I know these two signings, guys, just quickly. I know these two.
Halaschuk, too.
And Halaschuk. I know these two signings aren't the ones that everybody was waiting for. I know everybody's waiting for Blake Wheeler and Zach Bogosian and Brian Little to be signed, but I think they're important signings, and I like how they were each offered two-year contracts, because Tangrady was a guy that couldn't get a regular job in Pittsburgh. He was bouncing back from Wilkes-Barre and
got every opportunity.
He did get a lot of opportunity, but he wasn't part of the long.
If he couldn't play with Crosby, what makes you think
Malkin, yeah.
and Malkin, or what makes you think that he has the skill set necessary to be a third or even a fourth line guy?
Well, the Jets signed him to a 2-year deal, so they did. So
that's what I'm saying. I don't see what I mean based on his performance here. You know, if he's I like James Wright's game also, but.
If you have to pick between the two, I think you pick Wright based on what we saw last year. I think created more chances and such. I mean, Tangrady's got to be that forechecker, and he's got to change his game. He's not going to be the second-line left winger with Evgeny Malkin. He couldn't do that job. Yeah. He's going to have to be more of a plugger. So can he change his game and become an effective player? And that's on him. In terms of salary, Drew, I think at the end of the day, they don't pay him enough to really worry about it too much. I mean, Tangrady's jumping at anything that's a one-way deal. So he gets 2 years. The Jets basically have a guy who's going to be their minimum salary player. So they guarantee one of their 23-man roster spot on a guy who, you know, won't really hurt them but won't be that helpful.
And if it ends up that they have to put him through waivers, and if they were to lose him that way, it's not a big deal.
Right.
And if you're talking about who's the first guy to possibly have a seat in the press box for a guy to come up, it's Tangrady, it's Halaschuk. Those guys, they're going to be on the fourth line. But I think he knows his role. I mean, it's pretty, like you said, I mean, it's pretty clear that Eric Tangrady at this point in his career is not going to be a second liner, knows his role. He's getting a nice 2-year contract from a team who is rewarding him for, you know, a good 30 games that he gave, and I have no problem with that.
Let me get in there for 1 second, though, because I agree, and you know, you look at it from the perspective of can he be that top six guy. But the Jets, as currently constructed, their first three centers, I believe, will be Little, Scheifele, and Jokinen. So, in that's the case, do you actually have a checking line? And if not, then does Tangrady have the opportunity to be a third line kind of scoring line, you know, with the likes of Jokinen and Frolik? And if that's the case, you know, the opportunity will be there for him. I mean, the Jets kind of tried to do that scoring line last year for the third line, and that kind of blew up in their face. So we'll see how that goes again. But as they're currently constructed, there is no checking line here, really. I mean, Frolik can be that guy on like a fourth line, third line role. Although I think he's got some nice offensive skill. But what's Jokinen? And you're not going to really have Scheifele as a checker, and Little is your scoring guy, and Slater can't score. So, I mean, the roster's like, flawed, right? So,
well, it's like we've said. It's sort of a mishmash of different parts that don't necessarily have a specified role.
Right. I think it's pretty clear, guys, that the wings are set. I mean, the top two lines are set.
Yeah.
Second line center, third line center, fourth line, who's going to play on the wings. Those are huge things that are not only an issue now, they've been an issue for 2 years now. It was a problem during the lockout shortened season, and, you know, we're going to be talking about this, you know, we're going to be on the air all summer. We're going to be talking about this, you know, does Mark Scheifele spend some time in the AHL? Do you start him on the second line? Do you play him on the third line? Do you keep Jokinen with Evander Kane? It didn't work. I don't know why you would keep putting a round peg in a square hole, right? But those are questions that are, you know, Those are big questions, not to mention the defense pairings. Are you going to keep Buff and Enstrom together? Is Klitsam going to play, you know, your second pairing?
Lots of questions.
Lots of questions.
Yeah, lots of questions with this roster. Let's talk about Postma. How does Postma fit into this? The Jets have, without Zach Bogosian, you know, assuming something gets done with Zach Bogosian, they're going to have eight guys on one-way contracts, eight defensemen on one-way contracts, and that doesn't even include Zach Redmond yet. So how do you see the defense falling out here?
Redmond's probably pushing for a one-way deal, and they're probably saying get two-way deal, especially with the injury risk. They're not sure what they have just yet with him. And I think people got a little bit carried away with Redmond last year. I think that's being kind of – there's an indication to that with the Jets now, saying, you know, they're not putting him up as a 5-6 guy and saying, okay, it's your role. In terms of Postma-Drouin, I'm a tad surprised that he got the second year only because he didn't seem to be a favorite with the coaching staff last year. I mean, his game did improve at times, but – nothing special. I don't think he can be trusted that much defensively. And this team has an abundance of offensive capability up front, on the back end. The problem on the back end, they can't defend. So if you throw Paul Postma up in there with Enstrom and Bufflin and those guys, I mean, you have a lot of flaws defensively. So I don't know. I mean, maybe he fits in as a filler for those guys playing second PP and all that stuff, because that's kind of what his role is going to be. But, you know, you want to try and bring him along like a Cody Franzen role in Nashville. Something like that seems more apt in this situation. But at the same time, I mean, who is he? I think this organization wants Jacob Trouba to succeed this year in the NHL. It's just my perspective. And so if that's the case, and hopefully he does from a Jets perspective, then I'm not sure Postma fits in as a significant role at all.
Yeah, Richie, I think he's going to battle to get in the lineup. I don't think by any means he'll play 80 games. He might play 40 or 50 games. We're just, you know, speculating here. But Postma's only 24 years old. He's still young. He was drafted by the Thrashers organization. A lot of fans got frustrated with Postma because of his offensive upside, and he didn't really produce last year and he ended up not playing. But he's the type of guy that I think Richie's onto something there, that you're bringing him on a little bit. Last year was his first taste of the NHL, really. Full-time taste of the NHL, and I think that they're still kind of looking to see what he can do, and there's areas of his game that he needs to improve. I think he's got a good skill set, and I think he can be the type of guy that can contribute on the power play, but I think he's not the most physical guy, and I think that he's still learning how to be successful in the NHL. I think he's proven that he can be successful in the AHL. I think he's still trying to prove himself, and you know, he might be better served playing the AHL, because you look at, I don't really, you know,
they on a one-way deal,
on a one-way deal.
I know, and they have party on the one-way deal, and
they
Trouba's gonna have growing pains. He might, you know,
well, he's not on a one-way deal, which is why you could see him going down. But you want to look at it from the perspective of how do we best develop this player, not how do we protect Paul Postma and Adam Party spare parts for, you know, with all due respect. Postma's biggest issue, one of his biggest issues, is at the AHL level, he can make decisions because things don't happen as quickly.
Yep.
At the NHL level, he did improve this over time because you have to adjust to the speed. But even then, he's not the fastest skater, and his decision-making took an extra second. Not even an extra second. An extra 0.3 of a second. In the NHL, that makes a world of difference, and he was making mistakes that were costing the team and costing himself. Can he adjust to that? Over time, maybe. But you also need to have the playing time. You know, practice doesn't help so much with that in that regard. Game speed is game speed. And if you're playing as a seventh defenseman, how do you improve that? You need to get in there. And to get in there, you have to me, beat out, you know, the guys we mentioned before. So his role as an NHLer is kind of dependent right now on trades or injuries.
Quick question. Just a quick one-word answer. Assuming the Jets re-sign Bogosian, Little, and Wheeler, and we all expect that they're going to, is this the roster that the Jets start the season with?
I think so, Drew. I think if there was going to be a move to maybe add a left winger like a Dustin Penner, that kind of, they didn't want to do that. And I think this is the roster they're probably going with, unless there is a defenseman trade, which by the numbers there may be.
Once they spend $13 or $14 million a year on these three RFAs, they're not going to have a lot of cap room either. So I think that this is the roster. Once they sign three more players, that's probably it.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to break down the Winnipeg Jets schedule. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you. Always interested to hear what the audience has to say. Like what you're hearing, dislike what you're hearing. Doesn't matter. You can still tweet us. Let's talk about the Jets schedule, boys. Came out finally yesterday with the announcement, the inevitable announcement that the NHL players are going to participate in the Sochi Olympics next year. You know, Jets schedule to me just seems very normal. Is that the best word I can use to describe it? I mean, it just seems like an average schedule. There's nothing great about it. There's nothing terrible about it. A lot of, you know, Friday games this year. I mean, they play 11 Fridays, 9 of them at home. So you can see that that's going to be a big focus of attention. Just pretty basic to me.
My issue, I don't actually care that much at all, but my only recommendation maybe on an ongoing basis would be to change those Sunday games, which is a fair amount of, to late afternoon.
Right now, all the Jets home games on Sunday, which there are 5 of them, start at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
You think that's too late on a Sunday?
I don't think it's necessarily too late, but, you know, you're just starting your work week, things like that. Why not have a Sunday afternoon game, 4:30, 5 o'clock?
Sure.
Yeah.
Like sort of an early evening game.
Yeah. I don't know. That's my only thing. Otherwise, it's, as you said, Drew, it's a pretty, you know, normal schedule for the first time for the Jets, and I think it looks good to me. There's obviously finally the NHL has adjusted to what the fans want, and you're going to see every player in the league now, which is a great. I mean, it's not great.
It's logical.
It was logical, and it was a necessity as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's obviously those some highlight games, and as he's looking at right now, and you got that break for Sochi, which will be interesting, I think, this year especially, and has been in all Olympic years, in terms of the trade deadline. Because usually what happens is that break happens and there's 3 games or 2 games, boom, trade deadline. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if the trade deadline has been announced yet for next year, but the idea is you have basically a month period to evaluate your team and make decisions. Of course, the one thing to take into consideration, I'm sure we'll talk about this down the road, is if a player that you intend on trading happens to get injured in the Olympics, do you trade him before or after? So there's a little bit of the, you know, storyline there that we can focus on down the road. But I think another thing to note, before Ezzy comes in here, is, you know, CBC doesn't really want much for the Jets.
And yeah, let's talk about that point for a second. I mean, you know, you could sort of see it last year in that there was 0 home games that started at 6 o'clock on Saturday night last year. Now you can maybe chalk that up to a little bit of the lockout scheduling and everything else along those lines. This year, it's pretty crystal clear that CBC does not want the Jets at 6 p.m. on Saturday night. I don't necessarily blame them. The Jets aren't, I mean, there's a smaller population here in Winnipeg. I don't think it's necessarily a shot. I think it's just a strict numbers factor.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the fact that the Jets and the Blackhawks, so Jonathan Toews' first game in Winnipeg in November, is on a Saturday afternoon, and it conflicts with the Bomber game.
And, well, I'm going to talk about that in 1 second, but I actually don't mind the afternoon games, in the sense, if you're a Jets fan, you get on national TV.
Sure.
If you're a Jets player, you get more exposure than the regional game anyways.
Right.
In terms of the Bomber game, I don't know how that even happens. And that's not on the CFL. It's not on the Bombers. That's on the NHL. Predominantly, I assume, NHL and the Jets or whoever was scheduling that. I don't know how, with 2 teams in a city, the Bombers playing 9-10 times a year, how you schedule 2 games at the exact same time.
I
don't get it. I mean,
you would think that the two sides would work together.
I don't understand.
I mean, and, you know, look, they promote concerts together. And, I mean, I don't pretend to have any intimate relationship or intimate knowledge of the relationship between the Bombers and True North. But you think, you know, the Bomber schedule's out months ahead of time. You would think, just as a courtesy, really to the fans, not even if the two teams, even if the two organizations hate each other, as a courtesy to the fans, you would think, look, we're going to do everything in our power. We're just not going to schedule games at the same time in the same city.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous when you only have 10 CFL games, and they have a lot of time. They obviously had more time this year with the lack of an Olympic announcement, and it's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. It really is. The fans lose. That's all that happens there. People can't go to both games, and there are a lot of fans out there that want to go to the Bombers game. Right. They want to go to the Jets game
and make it one big event day.
Yeah, well, and that, just like the first year.
In the first year, there was a game that Ezzy and I went to the Bomber game as our, you know, our
was that not an overlap though too, and they changed it?
It wasn't an overlap.
Okay.
Ezzy and I went to the Bomber game,
yep,
and then we hightailed it from the Bomber game to the arena for the Jets game.
Okay.
Last year, had there not been a lockout, there was a scheduled conflict again. So it seems like neither, you know, the Jets just, and I can't blame the Jets because, again, I don't know what goes into this, but it seems like there just isn't that consideration being made for the sports fan in Winnipeg who wants to watch the Jets and the Bombers, or who has season tickets to the Jets and the Bombers. And, you know, if you have a conflict, pick one. That seems to be what the what is being said to them.
And that's probably the biggest negative of the schedule, I would say, that sticks out. I think when you look at the schedule, 8 of the first 10 games are at home. Have so for fans and for the team, you know, that's well, probably a good start.
Let's talk about that for a second, right. Ezzy. How important is it for the for the Jets? We know the Bombers aren't getting off to a good start. How important is it for the Jets to get off to a good start this year, mm-hmm. when you have 8 mm-hmm. of the first 10 at home? And it's not a very difficult 10 games, I got to tell you. This isn't the preeminent teams in the NHL.
Yeah, well, it's important. I think it's always important, especially when you're a team that isn't expected to be a front runner for the Western Conference title or division title. So I think it's really important. And, you know, they had a favorable schedule last year with all of those home games, you remember, and they couldn't take advantage. They had the back-to-back home games against the Washington Capitals, and that's kind of when the season fell apart there towards the end of the season. And so it's imperative that they get a good start. And, you know, I look at the schedule and it's just nice that, you know, Vancouver is going to come into town, Calgary is going to come into town. We're in the Western Conference. There isn't all this, you know, traveling to Florida all the time. I think the schedule is generally pretty balanced. I think the longest road trip is 6 games. If I'm right about that.
I believe 6 games in end of November, early December, yeah.
And there's a couple trips in California we were looking at. In March, there's a California trip.
There's a 5-game road trip in March yeah. and April as well.
Yeah.
But those are reasonable numbers to be on the road yeah. for.
But you mentioned, Drew, you know, the importance of October. I look at the schedule. I see an October month that's a heck of a lot easier than a November month. So sure. you'd want, you know, you play the Blackhawks 3 times in November. You yeah. play the Red Wings twice. You play the Sharks. You play the Flyers twice. They're going to be better. The Flyers will 100% be better. And you have some other division rivals and other teams
Minnesota
on the East Coast.
There.
So yeah. you have to have a good October. I think that's very important.
One home game in the entire month of February. Again, that's largely due to the lockout. They play five. To the Olympics. Yeah. They play 5 games in February. The first 4 are on the road. Then they got the Olympic break, and then they play at home to Phoenix on a Thursday night at the end of February, the 27th of February. So the fans in Winnipeg will go almost an entire month without seeing the team at home. Again, that's just a factor of the Olympic break this year more than anything. For the second time in 3 years, the Jets will play in Montreal for the Habs' traditional Super Bowl Sunday afternoon game. Mm-hmm. They did that in the first year they came back.
I was at that game.
That's right. You were at that game in that first year. They do it again. They'll do it again this year. That's the Sunday, February 2nd game. It's a 12 noon Central Time start.
It's just nice. It really is, guys, just nice that the schedule came out. Because remember, we all thought it was going to come out Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It's just nice because, you know, fans were tweeting at us. You could see how asking us when's the schedule coming out. No one knew. And then, you know, it was leaked a little bit before it came out. Not like it was last year. But it's just nice that the schedule's out and we know, you know, what we're looking at. People can make their plans. Sauch, longtime listener, said he's made plans to travel to Florida. You know, people are going to travel to Minneapolis, Chicago. People want to make their, you know, their decisions. So it's nice that it's in front of you now. You can make your decisions and kind of analyze it. Because that's, you know, what people do. They kind of, you're looking at an 82-game schedule. It's tough to make too much sense of it when you start saying, okay, can we beat this team? Can we beat that team? I mean, it's too early to start doing that. But it's just nice that it's on paper.
The Jets, the Colorado Avalanche, and the San Jose Sharks all play the fewest number of back-to-back games in the NHL.
I'm counting 8.
10 for the Jets.
Sorry,
it's 10 for the Jets. The New Jersey Devils play the most, 22 back-to-back games for the New Jersey Devils.
That's right. I was just through, yeah, March.
Now, granted, that's largely probably due to the proximity of New Jersey to a lot of other teams, right. But 22 is a lot. The Jets will travel. This is courtesy of our good friend Dirk Hoge on the forecheck. The Jets will travel 46,477 miles in the air for this 2013-2014 season.
Time zones are important in that respect. You mentioned the Devils. Yeah, you know, the proximity to the Islanders and the Flyers and the Rangers. Looking at this schedule, Drew, I will tell you one thing. There are no excuses.
There's no excuses.
There were built-in excuses last year. Not that they relied on them necessarily, but they were there. This year, there is no excuse. I mean, that few back-to-back games, mm-hmm. and you're playing, for the most part, in your time zone, in your division, you know, you're getting a pretty good deal there.
Absolutely right. Before we go to break, an update on a story that we brought you last week here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's not a big deal, but the shower head was disconnected from the hose. So I haven't had time to go to Home Depot and get a shower head. So for the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've just been using basically a hose. Basically, I've been showering with a hose.
Like a farm animal.
It's been 7 days, Ezzy, since we that news first broke on the show. I think it's been about a month earlier that we just didn't know about it. Have you managed to acquire a shower head in the past 7 days?
By the way, this Reem's playing footage that he actually recorded of me showering. No, I still haven't had time. I'm still...
Oh, you're busy.
I'm still...
You've been busy, eh? Last night, having a few beers before the game. Couldn't go buy a hose.
I am currently shower headless.
You went to an auction on Thursday rather than buying a shower head.
I should have actually got a shower head at the auction.
I was thinking that.
But no, I
we have a good idea for you getting a shower head, though.
Doesn't have that one up here. Anyways, so you're still working on acquiring.
I'm still showering with a hose.
It's your birthday on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I assume any of our listeners.
I have an extra one actually in my place.
Okay, maybe a birthday gift for.
But will it fit? Will it fit my hose?
Whoa. No, we're not even going there. If any of our listeners would want to drop off a shower head to Ezzy here at the station, I'm sure the station would graciously accept.
Hold on, Ezzy.
That's the Commando 450. I don't sell that one. What about this?
No, that's what we want. It's a Commando 450.
No, believe me. It's only used in the circus. It's for elephants.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org. That website, one more time, cga-manitoba.org. The CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, some contract signings in and around the NHL over the past week, in addition to the ones that we spoke about regarding the Winnipeg Jets. The big one comes out of L.A., where they lock up yet another one of their key core members of the team to a long-term deal. Dustin Brown, 8 years, $47 million, an average annual value salary cap hit of $5.875 million. Is this a good signing for the Kings and Brown?
Well, it's most certainly a good signing for Brown. My concern, I mean, he's the heart and soul of the team. He's the leader. He's done a great job there. I mean, you want to argue the other side a little bit. You say, okay, I mean, Dustin Brown's never scored more than 30 goals in a year. Dustin Brown's attained the point total of 60 points once in his career, and you're paying him $5.75 million. Now, that's a concern because I don't think he's not your natural top point getter, but you paid him a little bit below that level. So I'm not so concerned about it in that respect. I know he's a heart and soul. He's a captain. He does everything. I mean, he personifies everything that the LA Kings want to in that whole region. So I understand that. The one concern I have is the 8 years. Because Dustin Brown plays such a ruthless style of hockey. He's 28 years old. He's going to be 29 in November. So this deal is going to take him, you know, 8 year deal, take him 36, 37 years old. Can he continue at this level or anything close to this level based upon the style he plays? You know, we have examples of the Wendell Clarks and of the Cam Neelys who slow down because they play such a reckless style. That's just the way it is.
And Richard,
Eric Lindros. And so can he, you know, I realize they're paying him a little more in the early years and they hope in the later years the cap goes up and they can deal with it. But that would be the concern. But I understand that he is the LA Kings. And this is, at the end of the day, that's the guy they want there. They want him to feel comfortable and they want him long term.
Yeah, and I think he's getting probably a little bit more on an average annual basis because of the Stanley Cup. I mean, if it wasn't Jonathan Quick for the Conn Smythe that year, I think it would have been Dustin. I think we'd all agree that Dustin Brown probably would have been the next guy to get the Conn Smythe. He was absolutely dominant. I mean, he's the captain of the team. He's the leader. Like Richie said, he's the heart and soul. But there are similar concerns for David Clarkson in Toronto, a guy who is around the same age, a little bit younger. But, you know, Dustin Brown is getting the max term, and he's getting a good contract here. But, you know, he is also – he's not the offensive leader of the team. You look at guy how he was playing in the playoffs. We talked about that a lot. They got to the Western Conference Finals, and
– he had 4 points total.
I was going to say 5 or 6, but, yeah, there you go, 4 points. And he struggled. And there were issues, you know – with some lingering injuries, but I think with Dustin Brown, he's I think only missed, you know, like 10 or 12 games in his entire career. He plays almost a full season every year.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you can't forget that Dustin Brown is the type of guy that if he starts to wear down, this might be a contract later on. I don't think they're going to regret this contract because, you know, when it's over, he'll be 36, 37. And I think this was an easy one. When you've put in this much time, you've been the captain of the team for this long, you led the team to the Stanley Cup, I think it was just a question of how much money were they going to give him. And they probably overpaid him a little bit, but I think they are happy to overpay him based on the type of player he is. Almost any team in the NHL would want Dustin Brown on their team. I think we'd all agree with that. If you're a team that wants to get over the hump, you'd probably want Dustin Brown on your team. And the LA Kings, because he's only played with one team, are locking him up for 8 years, giving him a nice salary. I really like Dustin Brown. When the Kings won the Cup, you know, he was giving an amazing performance night in and night out. And last year, he didn't look like the same player. So that's maybe why people are scratching their heads a little bit, because he only had 4 points in, 15 or 16 games? So people were...
18 games.
18 games. So people are probably thinking, okay, well, what did he do last year? But I mean, that's just... That was a poor performance. That's not. I think that's a little bit of an aberration. I don't think you should expect his numbers to decline. And Richie, like Richie said, he's not a 90-point guy. He's like a 60-point guy.
Yeah, take out last season because of the lockout. The 5 seasons prior, starting from 2007, 2008, 60, this is total points, 60, 53, 56, 57, 54.
Yeah.
And he's giving you, essentially he's going to give you every year, 25 goals and 30 assists. He's basically got that every single season. Yep. So as you mentioned, he's very reliable health-wise, and he provides that. You know, you have that angle, obviously. If you look at, you know, maybe another comparable player could possibly be, I think the best comparable actually for him would be Ryan Callahan. Heart and soul, right winger.
Contract statuses when they signed their extensions, though. Like, yeah, Brown was going to be a UFA after next year, right?
Well, Callahan was too, I believe, because he's 28. But
okay.
I have to check in. I just pulling off the top of my head here. But, you know, guys who are wingers who, because Brown will play both sides. I mean, last year he played left and right wing. But when you look at overall performance, Callahan's a guy who the past few years, you know, 23, 29 goals, 55, 50 points. So Brown may be a little bit more offensively talented, but heart and soul on their squads, captains, leaders, guys in the trenches. And Callahan signed for, you know, 4.275 per year, and he has next season on that as well. So, you know, maybe Callahan signed something in line with Brown or just a little bit below. That would be the comparable. So, I mean, it's not completely out of line. I don't really have an issue with the money so much as, you know, maybe the Kings didn't want to give him the last 2 years, but they say, hey, for what you've done for our franchise, and if you treat those guys well, that's one thing, Drew. You treat a guy well, you give him that contract, other players in the organization are going to realize that.
You know what I love the most now about this deal, too? Because the LA Kings now have Slava Voynov,
yep,
Drew Doughty, Dustin Brown, Mike Richards, and Jonathan Quick all signed for...
Kopitar.
And Kopitar. Thank you, Richie.
And Carter.
6 years or more. No, with those two guys I don't think are 6 years. They're less. But Voynov, Quick, Richards, and Doughty.
Richards is signed through is a UFA in 2020.
Yep.
Carter's and a Carter, UFA yep. in 2022.
It's a good nucleus to have locked up there. And I mean, this is a team that is going to be good, I believe, for a long time.
Yeah. The next big
the core
UFA,
of that team is, you know, 28, 29 years old. It's a good core.
Kopitar's a UFA in 2016-17. But, I mean, other than that, you're right. This is going to be their roster going forward for the next while. And it's a decent, and it's a good roster to go forward with.
It's more than decent.
Yeah, it's more than just decent, exactly. It doesn't even mention Jonathan Quick, who's a UFA in 2023. So this core of the team, assuming that they stay healthy and everything else, is, should be one of the better teams in the Western Conference for the next almost decade. I mean, regression notwithstanding.
5 years for sure.
Yeah. One other signing that happened this week, Matt Duchene signs an extension with the Colorado Avalanche. 5 years, $30 million, average annual value of $6 million for Matt Duchene.
Matt Duchene's an interesting guy because he came out and had a great rookie year. The season after that, he improved on his totals. He had more assists. He had a couple more goals. Then the year after that, he had an awful season. So 11-12, he put up 28 points, guys, in 58 games. So the question was, you know, what is he? Because some people had questions when he was drafted, you know. We know he can skate like the wind. We know he's got great hands. Can he put it all together? Last year, I thought he'd take a great step forward. Point per game was as good as it was going to be, you know, as good as he's been in his career, if not, actually better. 43 points in 47 games. I think he really took to that number one center role last year. Paul Stastny really hasn't been what they thought he would be. And I think if you're looking at this team next year, it's Matt Duchene, number one center. Paul Stastny, number two, unless he gets dealt. Number three center would be Nathan MacKinnon. I think over time, MacKinnon will vault ahead of Duchene, but it won't be because Duchene isn't capable as the number one center. It'll be because MacKinnon is one of the superstars of the next generation. So if you're looking at Duchene from that respect, you have basically your first-line center for the next couple of years, and then you're probably your second-line center for the few years after that locked up. I have no issue with it. When you're paying talent, you know, look at Evander Kane's deal. You're looking along similar lines, right?
Yeah. You're buying out a couple of his UFA years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you're buying out the next. I mean, he's still under contract this year. Then I think you're buying out two RFA years and then three UFA years, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, you know, $6 million, the guy, if he's going to get you a point a game.
Yeah, you're buying out three RFA years. Three UFA years, excuse me, and two RFA years.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he's a point-a-game player, you know, that's what a point-a-game player gets paid in the NHL.
That Avalanche team next year is going to be scary good. And they're not, I don't think they're going to, you know, win the Stanley Cup next year, but Richie just went over it. And I know Rick had Mark Mosher on the roundtable yesterday talking about the lines, and I think they're going to, like Richie said, Richie's right, Nathan MacKinnon will play on the third line. With Steve Downey
and McGinn,
and that team, like, I mean, that's your third line, right? I mean, that could be a second line on a lot of teams. Steve Downey had the injury, but I mean, he's the type of guy. If he's on your third line playing with Nathan MacKinnon, that's a pretty pretty good third line.
TSN 1290 breaking news:
Zach Redmond has accepted his qualifying offer from the Winnipeg Jets. So he is he's under contract with the Winnipeg Jets right now. That'll be
His qualifying offer. He made 8.7. I guess is it a one-way deal?
I would assume qualifying offer would be.
I have to
right?
check. It's 8.75 last year, and I believe there's a 10% built-in raise on qualifying offers below a couple million. I don't know the exact threshold, so he'd probably make 10% of 8.7. You know, is 87,000 extra, so he'd be making about 950 next year.
That would sound about right. He made $737,500 last year, so his cap hit was $875,000.
That's without
last
bonuses,
year.
Though.
That's without bonuses. Yeah. So he made $875,000. Yeah. They qualify him at 10% more,
I believe.
So he should make just under $1 million.
Yeah,
$950,000 or so on a 1 year. Should be a one way deal, if I'm not mistaken. Well, he was under a two way deal last year.
Yeah, I have to look into how that policy works. I wouldn't. Be shocked if I have to check.
Have to double check on that part. But again, one more time before we go to break. And Zach Redmond has accepted his qualifying offer from the Winnipeg Jets. We'll probably get paid just under $1 million by the Jets next year. And we are double checking on if it is a one way deal or it's a two way deal. My suspicion is it's a one-way deal, but we're going to double-check and we'll report back.
It's great news.
Let's go to break. The Winnipeg Jets have a glut of defensemen, let me tell you. And we'll see how that plays out over the course of the next weeks and potentially months. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One more time, if you're just joining us, Zach Redmond, Winnipeg Jets defenseman, who had been a restricted free agent, has accepted the Winnipeg Jets qualifying offer. While we don't have the exact figures, he is likely to make around just under $1 million on an NHL deal. Lawyer extraordinaire Richard Pollock is in the midst of trying to figure out if it's a one-way deal or a two-way deal. What can you decipher to some degree from the CBA at this point in time?
Not too much yet, Drew, but one clause here says, a player and a club shall at all times be free to negotiate and enter into a two-way standard player contract, including those players who are eligible to receive or have received a one-way qualifying offer. But that, I assume, is a qualifying offer made and then a negotiation after the qualifying offer. In this case, he has accepted the qualifying offer, so that doesn't yet indicate whether the qualifying offer is automatically a one-way deal or can be a two-way deal as well.
So what we're still waiting to hear, and we'll hear this from the Jets organization when the release comes out regarding Zach Redmond.
I think Scott Norton is acting for him, I believe. And maybe we can get in touch with him and see what the details are on that, too.
Sure. Scott Norton would have been, yes, he was his agent who was heavily involved when Zach Redmond went down with his injury in Carolina
last week. Regardless, guys, if it's a one-way deal or a two-way deal, and we talked about Zach Redmond a lot during the season, this is just great news because he came back from that freak accident and, you know, ended up playing. I don't know if he actually did end up playing maybe one or two games in the AHL. And he really showed what, you know, perseverance is all about. I mean, we were talking about, you know, a terrible, terrible injury. And the guy has so much potential. And it's great. And, you know, talking about, you know, Paul Postma signing and the Jets signed Adam Partey a couple of weeks ago, you know, Claude Noel is going to have some decisions to make because Jacob Trouba, you have to think, is not coming into the NHL and starting as a top-pairing defenseman. So he'll probably start off as a third-pairing defenseman or second-pairing defenseman. I think we'd all agree with that. So does Zach Redmond, depending on if it's a two-way deal, does he spend a little time in St. John's? Does he spend the whole year in St. John's? Or do they decide to keep him in Winnipeg the whole year? But then you've got an issue with having, I think, 9 defensemen on one-way deals. Is that?
That would be 9, yeah.
Yeah. So they have 9 defensemen on one-way deals.
That's why it leads me to believe that this would necessarily be a one-way deal. It doesn't make...
Right.
Logically, I don't think it would be. I'm just trying to find the exact clause, so we'll look into that further. But you know what, Ezzy, where does he fit in the big picture right now? I'm not sure he fits in really this year. And I'm not sure the Jets are sold. I mean, they qualified. I mean, they want to retain his rights, obviously. That's what you have to do to retain a player's rights, is you have to tender him a qualifying offer. The player can choose to accept it or not. So for the fans out there who don't necessarily understand that, the Jets have qualified Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, and Zach Bogosian to retain their rights. But doesn't mean the player has to accept the offer. In this situation, they have accepted it. They, meaning Zach Redmond and his agent, have accepted the qualifying offer. So the Jets want to retain his rights. They're going to qualify him. But the contract of Paul Postma leads me to believe that, you know, they aren't completely sold on Redmond in terms of, you know, what they want to do on that kind of spot. Because I think Redmond and Postma kind of are fighting with each other for ice time. I think that's, if they can get into the top six, either of them, they're going to be fighting to get into that top six. And, you know, at the same time, we're really breaking down a Jets team. We're breaking down Redmond and Postma, who may very well not play much this year. A bigger issue is however many players the Jets have as he signed on defense, they still can't defend. I mean, you have a group of 6 guys, 7, 8 guys. I mean, you tell me this team's going to learn how to defend and be a top player next year, to a top team next year. I'm not sure. I just don't see it.
One of the biggest issues that the Jets are going to face next year is having steady defense pairings and improving the overall team defense, because it's got to get better from last year.
Just got off the phone with Scott Norton, the agent for Zach Redmond. He confirms that it's a two-way qualifying offer that Zach Redmond has accepted. So he'll make just under the $1 million threshold when he's an NHL player, and he'll make an equivalent AHL salary of something less than that. Don't quite know what the AHL salary will be. But it is a two-way deal, a one-year two-way deal for Zach Redmond with the Winnipeg Jets.
And Drew, that's logical, right? because they wouldn't have signed Party had they known they had left a qualifying offer of a one-way deal to Redmond out there because they would have had too many players. So that makes sense.
That's right. So what it boils down to, the Jets, once they sign Zach Bogosian, they will have 8 defensemen on one-way contracts, including Jacob Trouba, who they can send down to the AHL as they wish. So that's not going to be a problem there.
I have a sneaking suspicion they're really counting on him to be they're not relying on him.
They're going to treat him like Dougie Hamilton in the Bruins last year.
I think so, yeah.
So, I mean, what you expect the Jets roster to look like is they're going to have 8 defensemen up with the big club for most of the year.
It appears.
They're going to have 13 forwards, so they'll should have 1 spare forward up with the team. And they'll have the 2 goalies. That'll be the Jets' 23-man roster, just strictly looking at the one-way contracts that they've signed. Now, granted, if they end up trading a defenseman, which is certainly a possibility.
Well, hold on a second.
Okay.
Who are they trading? They just signed Postma. Party was a free agent nobody really wanted, as far as we can tell. Redmond's on this 2-way deal, just had the injury. He's not going to be traded. Bogosian, they're going to likely sign. They're not going to trade him. Enstrom, they just signed to a huge deal that kicks in this year. They're not going to trade him. They just signed Klitsam to a 2-year deal. Unless it's Stewart or Buffin, who are they trading, Drew?
I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you. That's why you got to figure that if it's anybody, it's going to be Buffin.
Stewart, you're not getting much other than a draft pick, probably.
They need Stewart in the dressing room.
I think so. And he's a leader out there. And they need guys who play the left side, too.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, if you look at that team, there's no depth right there on the left side of that team.
Nope.
On the left side defenseman. We still are surprised to hear, and it does sound like it, that the Jets seem to be going with Grant Klitsam as their number 2 left side defenseman this season.
Yes.
I mean, that by all accounts, that seems to be, if you look at the roster, that's what they're thinking. I don't necessarily know that that should be what they're thinking. In fact, I have my suspicions that they shouldn't be thinking that.
Maybe they aren't, but we don't know.
We don't know.
We will know soon, though. I mean, when training camp starts, are you going to make a blockbuster trade in training camp? That would kind of be surprising.
Yeah, but I mean, you're sort of into the period right now, the next 6 weeks, where it's getting into sort of the quiet time.
It's holidays. I mean, these guys do need some time off. They work a lot, and you know, I assume Shevelday will take some time away, like most GMs will, and you won't see much action, if anything.
Especially after the arbitration cases get settled, or they sign them to long-term deals in the next, which is really the next 10 days or so.
Yeah, I think Bogosian's August 2nd, Little's Wednesday.
Yeah, Little's Wednesday. That's 3 days from now. So
briefs are due on Monday.
48 hours before, as we went through previously here on the program. And of course, coming up after the next commercial break, we're going to start doing our mock arbitration cases, but go ahead, Richie.
You know, just reading about Chris Stewart and preparing for our mock arbitration case, reading about the Chris Stewart decision.
Chris Stewart signed with the St. Louis Blues. They avoided arbitration, a 2-year, $8.3 million contract, salary cap hit of $4.15 million.
And you listen to Doug, you read in Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Dispatch's article about it. Doug Armstrong says, didn't want to, I know Chris Stewart was getting married, I think, the next day, but didn't want to exchange briefs, didn't want to go through that process, figured this would be the best bet. He wasn't that happy with the contract number, probably neither was Stewart, and he thinks that's probably a good deal, which I agree with. I think generally a good contract is one that both sides feel like they've given too much. But I think the key, the part I'm trying to stress there is not wanting to exchange briefs, because in reality, Drew, you know, the argument, the 45-minute argument or 90-minute argument, excuse me, that they have, all that's going to be based on, majority of it will be based on, excuse me, the contents of the briefs that they exchange. So once the briefs are exchanged, likely the agent will give it to the player. And the player doesn't need to hear the guy say it. He'll read it. And once he sees...
It's probably even worse to read on paper than it is to hear to some extent. I mean, once you open that Pandora's box, you know, it's out there. You can't go back and unsay or untype what has been spoken.
And just so that people know, Little and Wheeler both have 6 years of six accrued NHL years, meaning their arbitration decision cannot be more than 1 year.
Right.
And if you do get under their skin in the wrong way and you get a 1 year deal, they could say, see ya next year.
Exactly right. They could become UFAs and your compensation for them would be nil unless you deal them at the deadline. Let's go to break. When we come back, it's mock arbitration time here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290.
Been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.